Blog Talk Radio.
This is the almost impossible.
So shall you blame those who give it up, those who say it isn't worth the struggle? Prayer or a death as going over, shot by your own forces to a greener place? Neither any longer usable. By fixes only, not even anymore by shamans, can the traceries be brought out. Yeah, Selva Oscura, but hell now is not exterior, is not to be got out of, is the coat of your own self, the beasts emblazoned on you. And who can turn this total thing, invert, and let the ragged sleeves be seen by any bitch or common character? Who can endure it where it is, where the beasts are met, where yourself is, your beloved is, where she who is separate from you is not separate, is not goddess, is as your core is, the making of one hell, where she moves off, where she is no longer arch. This is why he of whom we speak does not move, why he stands so awkward where he is, why his feet are held like some ragged cranes off the nearest next ground, even from the beauty of the rotting fern his eye knows as he looks down, as in utmost pain, if cold can be so called, he looks around this battlefield, this rotted place where men did die, where boys and immigrants have fallen, where nature, the years that she's took over, does not matter, where that men kill, do kill, that woman kills, is part two of his question. That it is simple what the difference is, that a man, men are now their own wood, and thus their own hell and paradise, that they are in hell or in happiness merely something to be wrought, to be shaped, to be carved for use for others, does not in the least lessen his, this unhappy man's obscurities, his confrontations. He shall step, he will shape, he is already also moving off into the soil, onto his own bones. He will cross. There is always a field for the strong. There is always an alternative. But a field is not a choice, is as dangerous as a prayer, as a death, as any misleading lady. He will cross and is bound to enter, as she is, a later wilderness. Yet what he does here, what raises up, he must, the stakes are such. This at least is a certainty. This is a law. Is not one of the questions. This is what was talked of as, what was it called? Demand? He will do what he now does as she will do, carefully do, without wavering, without, as even the branches, even in this dark place, the twigs, how even the brow of what was once to him a beautiful face, as even the snowflakes waver in the light's eye, as even forever wavers, gutters in the wind of loss, even as he will forever waver, precise as hell is, precise as any words or wagon can be made.
Good evening, this is Project U Radio, and I'm Lynn Alexander, and this is May 24th, and that was In Cold Hell Thicket by Charles Olson, and thank you to Frank Reardon for sending the link to it. This was Charles Olson reading in the mid-60s in Massachusetts, and apparently it was recorded for Robert Creeley. It's interesting, it's funny, because I'm getting like messages and texts and all kinds of people saying, like, what the fuck's going on? What are you doing? Why are you playing 9 minutes of Charles Olson? You know, because I think it's great. because I love it and because I think it just, you know, it just, it, parts of it really give me the chills. And, you know, the thing is with these kinds of shows, first of all, of course, we can do whatever we want, you know. But the other thing is that, you know, sometimes you hear something, you kind of hear somebody read, or you pick up a book and you just get so moved, and you just, it kind of reminds you why you read this and why you listen to it and why you go to readings, you know, and that's, you know, that's, I don't know, it's sometimes that happens to me, things just kind of touch me that way, and, you know, I don't know, I don't go because I like to, you know, be seen and be heard and network with other people and sell books, and, you know, I'm not knocking all of that, I mean, everybody does it, you know, everybody, you know, looks to make connections with one another, build community with one another, you know, it is a community, and we are social creatures, and we have social needs. But, you know, sometimes I just sort of step back and I say, you know what, I really need to sort of remind myself of why I love this and why I do it and why I listen to it. And I don't know, I think that just listening to it today, it just put me in such a zone, you know, and just really, yeah. So that's why, that's the reason. And I do appreciate the indulgence there. My intention, and, you know, we're all about good intentions here at Project U, not necessarily execution, was to play some tracks that I kind of prepared for of people that hopefully, you know, we're doing toxic abatement out in July in Oakland. I've said quite a bit about that in the past couple of weeks, and my plan was to try to play some pieces from some of the people that are scheduled to be performing there. I had something, you know, something wonderful from Sharon Coleman. I had Jezebel Delilah reading at Anger Management at Kaleidoscope, I guess about February, maybe 2010. Anger Management, the series that Paul Corman Roberts and H.K. Rainey produce. And I had, oh my gosh, I had Zarina Zabriskie doing Bleeding Love. I had Paul doing Marsupial. Marsupial is, you know, a track that I picked because I love it. It's cool. But also because, you know, a group of us sort of have fond memories of Marsupial. Marsupial was read by Brian Fugit. Well, we call him Brian Fuget. I call him Brian Fugit. From Tainted Coffee Press, and he read it actually at Snowetree in 2010. So, you know, it just sort of was something that, yeah, kind of had sentimental, nostalgic value to it. And you know, the audio is loading on here, and, you know, I wish I had Frankie Metro because he, you know, he's the radio man, and he probably knows what I've done wrong here. So I do apologize for that. Yeah, so, you know, so much for, you know, 40 minutes of content shot to shit. And, yeah, so anyway, this is part of the problem when you're doing things live. You know, you think things will go a certain way and then they don't. So that was Charles Olson. And let's see. So we are, you know what, I'm going to actually pick up Frankie Metro, because I'm like, how are you this evening?
What? Hello.
You know, I put all these audio, I don't know if you can see in the audio box, I put all of this audio in there, and it's not, yeah, it's not like accessing. No, and it's gone back to sent to processing. So now I'm very disappointed because, like I said, you know, I had all of these things prepped and.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
I got you. Let me log in, and I'll take care of that for you.
Yeah.
What's the first one you were trying to play there?
Well, I have Sharon Coleman, and then I re-uploaded it because she's. Yeah, I kind of got together a bunch of files of people doing toxic abatement, and I was adding them in, and they uploaded, but then they switched to processing, and I don't know what happened there. I have Jezebel Delilah in there. I have Zarina. I have Paul.
Well, I see them all here.
obviously Charles Olson played because that worked out. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, so...
Well, what do you want me to play first? I got you. What do you need?
I mean, yeah, I mean, I'd like... I mean, any of them, really. I mean, they're all good. It's all good stuff. But,
okay.
Yeah, I just don't know why I can't seem to get it going. But that was my plan for the evening.
Let's go with Sharon Coleman. How about that?
Okay, we'll give it a try.
I'll try it here. Let me see. Sharon Coleman, right now.
Abu Ghraib. Getting angry? The torturer's dog. After Fernando Botero's series, Abu Ghraib. For the second straight day, canine teeth win hearts, like a new law whose sperm, a potent symbolism, populates a newfound bitch. Locked eye to eye, like St. George becoming his hunted dragon, you sip on your demon's rubbery skin, and the demon breathes your dog's breath. Before or behind an adoring crowd, your dog, a would-be lone star, uses flawless procedures to hammer minds into ochre-olive labyrinths. Your dog, in electric green, doesn't need electricity to smack down, strike out in the wake of doped martyrdom. Your dog dives in when terror lapses and snakes about, hawking, lunging into payback and public flesh.
That was nice.
Yeah, she's wonderful. And, so she'll be at Toxic Abatement in July, and you, and... So I was trying to do, like I said, my plan was I had uploaded a few tracks from different, you know, people that are supposed to be there, and yeah, I don't know what happened, and I do appreciate you kind of, you know, having my back with this because I'm stuck. Yeah.
That's all good. What else? We've got another selection here from Sharon Coleman, actually.
It's actually the same. Actually, it's the same file. I tried to do it again. Yeah, when I couldn't get it to process, I've tried to do it again. So, yeah.
I've got Paul Corman Roberts from Age of Monsters here.
Yeah, that's cool. Age of Monsters was a reading that was for William Taylor Jr. Out in California, out in the Bay, and he had his book release. I believe his book is Epic Rights. Age of Monsters.
Yeah,
and they did sort of a book release, sort of a launch party, and so Paul was one of the performers that night reading. So I believe this track is Marsupial that I mentioned earlier, which was a reference to Brian. You'll hear him, but yeah, if you can. I'm sorry, I feel bad.
No,
if you
don't
can,
worry about it.
If you can get that one on there.
DJ
yeah.
Frankie Flash Metro is what I do.
I know. I don't know what.
Paul Corman Roberts, live in San Francisco at the Age of Monsters, William Taylor Jr. celebratory reading. Here we go.
I read this poem now at every reading because I lost a bet with my publisher. He said I lost a bet. He's about the years old. I have to read this poem at every reading I do. This is Marsupial. She latches on, claws embedded in my fur coat, and now comes the pulling and tearing, the process of the survivor's climb. And once she sought a mirage location, yes, a phantom lactation, but now she knows me. And still draws herself up to my agony, to that plateau, she throws her arms around to dream the dreams of the one blood. How to become Republican, part two. When I was younger, I used to be bigger than the communities I lived in. I may have well witnessed my neighbors chopping up their kids in the front yard, but me, I would just as soon head back inside to the AC and watch MTV.
Yeah.
When I was younger, if my neighbors asked for help, I might as well have said, fuck off, leave me alone. I have a cave, I can crawl deep toward the back, inside where you can't get me, where no one can get me, and no one is going to get me, so fuck off, motherfucker, fuck off. When I was younger, I would smoke pot on the weekends on the playgrounds of the local school, because I thought the weed spirit of ganja would chase away the brainwashing aura of the public school. Now, I'm a parent, and the community owns me. And I answer to the collective. Now that I'm a parent, I'm forever leveraged, and I wouldn't want it any other way. What the fuck was I thinking all those years ago? And I will wrap up. I know it's been a long set. This is a long set. This is the conspiracy poets from
number
168. I've been working this war horse all year long. This is the last time, I swear. Were you aware that our children are being educated by the National Security Agency? Sure they are. Did you count the number of pathogens hibernating in your last burrito / crepe / falafel / yuppie wrap sandwich alternative? Do you remember every person you sexually objectified on your way here this evening? Did you glimpse the virus sitting above you on the food chain? Have you noticed our entire species living in an air bubble that's going to pop someday? When exactly was the last time that you forgot to masturbate? Doesn't it seem like the other side of town is haunted, or at least very poorly lit? And why do all the old mad prophecies and predictions poets mirror the same goddamn story over and over again? Why indeed do all of the brilliant young underground poets invest so much of their valuable time crucifying all of the older, slightly less brilliant above ground poets? Because there can't merely be cleverness. There can't merely be virtuosity for virtuosity's sake. There must be humor, and humor means someone is going to get hurt. There must be humor, or else we will be dragging the corpse of academia around with us forever. And perhaps that's why we continue with this game as business of usual, because what is the moment that we are forever trying to capture, that the singular tiny thing right in front of our noses, that is an interlude between all the lyrical preludes where all any of us are hoping to do, is break out our galleries of agit porn. Like so many preening peacocks. Yes, it is romantic remembering our individual histories on a timeline that points to a source that we all came here to search for, an Easter egg hunt for common consciousness by poets who were the first tag artists, poets who were the first lawyers, poets who were the first storytellers, first musicians, poets who were the first clergy in an Eden of our making. But if it is sacred for which you speak, and you must take the Hajj of your life into that cathedral, that big cathedral, for him was a chance of the interior body. Because so many poets out there don't know how to love your Lilith, even though she's there for all of us. Don't complain to me that she's a hard bitch. She's the medicine you need. I know, because I saw his father with his daughter riding the BART train the other day. And the dad wanted to be so loved by all the young teen dreamers dolled up for the season, coming back from their orgy of conspicuous consumption down at the mall. But the baby girl is squirming in his arms. The baby girl is breaking down his pool in front of the hotties. A man unbabed by his baby. It ain't the first time it's gone down like that. And it won't be the last. This temple of public transit careens down the path of the secular left hand once more. Some of y'all poets just don't know your lil. Do not have to ball her to love her and break it down like you mean it, brother, because in the end, what is sex really but just a prayer that reminds us how close we lounge to the lizards in that big cathedral And when that's all said and done, so the fuck what? There's still the moment right here, the tiny little motherfucker right in front of your nose, crying out for your attention, crying out for your naming. And once you have engaged in this process of attention and naming, you will never be asked to defer, ever. You'll be lost in the gaping maw, lost in a wide open mouth, a process of smoking, singing, sucking, licking, eating, gnashing, swallowing, and breathing, all in search of a construct which may or may not belong to God, but which you must never forget is always a two-way street, regardless of the existence of invisible forces. So please, with that in mind, do you still wish to record the decline of Western civilization? Well, yes, go right ahead. Please do. Take a number and stand in line, because it is work that sets the self-analyzing monkey free, and this tells you, poet, seduce thyself and know that it is the inner heaven cylinder in which we will all see through the constructs. Because I'm telling you, I tried so hard to be an atheist. I tried not to believe, but ever since dawnlight came to the Sonoran Redlands, this is one exorcism that never ends. And language poetry, and language poets, thine cup runneth over and spills out into the greater Los Angeles Basin with no regard for whom you may drown along the way. But the survivors of language poetry will be stronger in the end, for this flood over the world's the stage behind which the great curtain remains the great colonizer of context, beneath which, yes, alas, the wizard is naked and horny and leering at Dorothy. But at least we can all be thankful for the United Occupiers Union, which reminds us each and every day, like freaky Freddie Hagel and crazy Karl Marx, keep hanging around like the true jazz men they are, ripping the apocalypse fantastic from the edge of their felt pork pie specials, asking each and every one of us that we crucify them each and every day, that some old, mad, slightly less brilliant, older, above-ground poet's prophecy just might come true.
Carl Corman Roberts.
Yeah. And I feel like that particular track, I mean, I actually, the last one is one of my favorite, but I think the quality was a little bit, you know, I hope it was okay to hear, if I had my way.
So. Somebody,
I mean, it was pretty clear.
Well, somebody on our events page just posted PCR exclamation point, so I think they heard it.
Yeah. Well, you know, like anything, you know, you try to get the best version of, you know, tracks that you can grab and get up here. And, you mm-hmm. know, I mean, I'll just put it out there. Obviously, and this show is sort of an example. I'm not good with radio. I'm not good with audio. I play around and stuff like that. But, you know, I probably should have picked maybe, a track where, you know, that was a little bit clearer. But, you know what, on the other hand, part of me kind of likes that you can hear the audience in the track. So I sort of picked things that had some of that, you know, like there's a part during Conspiracy where someone hollers out, you know, oh, cool, really loud and kind of weird. And I don't know, it's part of the experience. So I was, on the other hand, I was sort of looking, you know, not to be low tech, but to sort of find things that, you know, capture the atmosphere and the environment of the reading. So, you know, it's experimentation. You know, like anything else, you know. Since I have you here helping me, hopefully we can get Zarina Zabriskie, and I hope I'm saying that right, I think so, on there, because she's the one that I mean, she's got a lot of good stuff. You know, Zarina is sort of kind of burst out of nowhere, you know, not that
she's
long
a
ago. She's pretty new to the whole thing, and yet she's everywhere, you know, and we'll be seeing her in July also. A lot of us are looking forward to meeting her, and, you know, I love her voice, I love her, her accent, the whole thing. I mean, and she's just beautiful and, you know, very talented, and, yeah, it'll be cool.
There goes Lynn's girl crush again. Another girl crush. Uh-oh.
I know, but but I mean, I just, you know, I'm sorry. You know, I see her videos that Sammy puts up there, and I think she's, I don't know what it is. She just exudes something, you know.
She's
just got something about her. So, yeah, so I hope you can put Bleeding Love on there. I hope that one works, because I really like
by
that one.
Rena Zabriskie, live on Project New Radio's Spectral Ganglia right now.
Bleeding Love. Love is a Kalashnikov. But my laces are bulletproof. My locks are a golden helmet. My mascara is tear-proof. It is anti-crying. Wait, I've got weapons too. My lipstick is pure poison. My nail poison is venom. And my wounds bleed. My blood heals. I am Bleeding Love, Zara Medusa.
Yeah,
she's, you know what I mean? I don't know if you could tell with that particular audio, but I mean, I think she sounded pretty cool, and I think, you know, like I said, I love her voice.
Yeah, it was a very, I liked the line, what did she say, my nail polish is poison, and
yeah,
that was good shit.
And the way she says mascara. I mean, these are little things, these are things that I kind of, I guess, grab onto a little bit, and I don't know, yeah, I just, so I'm looking forward to it, you know, I think it'll be, I mean, that's going to be, I mean, a lot of people, we have a lot of people reading that particular night for Toxic Abatement. I mean, you're going to be there, I'm going to be there, Frankie.
I'm going to be there?
Yeah. You know, yes, you're going to be there, you're going to be there, it's July 5th, it's part of our... Oh, you're pulling my leg. You're definitely going to be there. I'm going to put your ass in a wheelbarrow and bring you there.
All right. Well, since I am going to be there, do you mind if I read a real quick poem? Is that okay?
I was hoping that you would. In fact, yeah, I was hoping you would. I mean, I definitely think you should.
Okay. Can you hear me okay? Am I coming through clearly?
You sound awesome, sir.
Thank you. This is entitled, and this is recently published in Modus Operandi, issue number 23. This is a poem entitled Ingmar Bergman's Arachnid Theology. God is a fraternal spider that will rape you if given too many chances. And if he can't, he'll crawl onto your face and up the wall and say, I don't know if love is proof of God's existence, or if love is God himself. For you, love and God are the same. And that's it.
Cool. That's in which one? 23?
23, actually.
23. Why don't I have that yet?
Because Perky's printer
is... What's Perky doing?
Yeah, Perky's slacking, man. I gave him some shit about it the other day. I was like, where's my Modus at, yo? And
he's
slacking. Yep.
You know what, I'm just going to call him out. He's made a couple of empty promises. You know, he was supposed to be the centerfold for the next issue, well, the last issue.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know, I noticed I didn't see any Perky in the middle. There was no spread in there, no.
I don't think he feels gutter cuddly enough, to be honest with you. I think we should all encourage his gutter cuddliness a little bit more and help to nurture that. And soon we'll see Stephen Perky open up like a lotus blossom. It'll be beautiful.
Yeah, he seems pretty open. I don't know. I mean, I'm supposed to send him, what am I supposed to send him? I think I'm supposed to pose with a rainbow clown wig.
I think was the
plan. Yeah, or goats or something.
God damn you, Stephen Perky and Nuamba Flamingo, you sons of bitches.
Goats are like a trigger word for you. You know, like in those old movies, like there's like a word and like the spy sneaks up and whispers something and it like triggers them to like do something that like they've been hypnotized to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you are with goats. Like,
well,
I think
actually, it's funny you mentioned that. Today I was reading The Infinite Jest, David Foster Wallace, describing a scene where a character is about to commit suicide and what have you. And he makes the reference in there, like calls her the prettiest girl of all time. And then in parentheses, he actually abbreviates it. And it's G-O-A-T, goat, and puts that in big bold letters. And I was like, I almost had a freak out just seeing that word in bold print, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it did it sort of trigger, you know.
It triggered, man. You
trauma.
Know, Nuwamba has traumatized me because, you know, Nuwamba and Portland and Stephen Perky and Modus Operandi, and you guys really have done a number on Frankie Metro. And, yeah, that's the way it works.
Yeah, yeah, well, no, I don't know. I don't know why we haven't gotten it yet, but I don't know. Maybe we'll have to give him a little bit of shit about it, you know?
I agree.
I'm gonna, and I'm going to pick up, should I pick up 219? I think, you know what, I always think I know who people are, but I'm really terrible with numbers and area codes. And yeah, but 219, whoever you are, please say hello and whatever you want.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Good evening.
Yes, I wanted to share a poem.
Oh, David
that
Lynch.
I wrote.
David Lynch.
Do you have time for me?
David Lynch, of course. Yes.
No, do you have time? This is a poem I wrote at a Zen monastery in Portland, Oregon.
You motherfucker.
It's called Silence. Silence. End poem.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Bravo.
That was, yeah, I have to say, that was the best of the night, best
Bravo.
Of the year.
Bravo.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh.
What I was saying earlier about those moments that remind you of, you know, why you love this stuff. Yeah.
Oh.
You touched me, man.
Oh.
How are you this evening?
He's torn up about it. That's how he is.
Emotional. Well, you know what? It's emotional. You know what? The vulnerability of sharing your deepest, innermost silence is,
yes.
You know.
That poem reminded me of that poem reminded me of my mother. So, yeah.
Your mother?
Yes. Thank you for sharing.
It reminded me of birch bark peeling on a lake in Maine.
Nice.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It just conjured up this whole
yeah.
Peeling.
The three-legged toad hopping.
Bark. Yeah. Wait, three-legged too. Yeah, well,
yeah.
Toxic waste. Yeah, could happen.
Toxic
like
abatement.
Like a genetic mutated toad.
What is toxic abatement?
What is toxic abatement? Well, do you mean in general, sir, or do you mean the event toxic abatement?
Can I identify as a female? Please don't call me sir. It's very, very, very offensive. I identify as a female.
Yes, we're dealing with a female, a lady here, obviously, Lynn Alexander.
Well,
this is a lady.
Yeah, but I call everyone sir. I mean, you can ask Michelle McDonald. I call everyone sir. I call my grandmother sir. I'm like Marcy from Charlie Brown. I just, yeah. But toxic abatement is it's an event that's going on in San Francisco in July, on July 5th, and it's just a whole bunch of people reading, and there's music, there's it's, you know, it's cool. It's contamination, it's toxic waste. We've got some lab suits, some protective garments. We've got a toxic pinata that's going to spew toxic waste all over your head, if you can, you know, get excited about that. Yeah.
Poet finger puppets as well. You forgot that. Poet finger puppets.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We could do finger puppets. That's the thing, is it's a little bit of everything. You know, it's just an eclectic mix of, you know, filth, toxins,
filth
pollution.
And fouls and filth.
It's like a celebration of
this program.
Yeah.
Yes.
We will, and we will. You know, some of the people that we just sort of sampled here, Zarina. We have actually, we should play Jezebel Delilah because she's amazing. Paul Sharon. We have Tim Murray coming out.
Who's Paul Sharon?
Paul Corman Roberts and Sharon Coleman. Sorry.
Oh,
and we have
Paul
Tim
Sharon.
Murray coming out west, and we've got.
Ooh.
Yeah, we've got Frankie Metro. We've got Cassandra Dallet. Just so many people. Joel Landmine. I mean, I could name a list. We have John Swain
basically
coming out.
The creme de la creme.
We have
I don't speak Spanish. I'm sorry.
You know. I mean, who's 502? You don't mind if we pick up 502, right? To join the proceedings here.
Hello.
Oh.
Good evening.
Oh.
Hey, Lynn. It's John Swain.
Oh.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. What's going on?
Oh.
I don't know if you had a chance to hear that Charles Olson in the beginning, but I was hoping that you would because I did.
I hadn't ever heard him read before. I liked it. I had to admit when I was like, "What the hell?" But it was intense. I liked it.
And you didn't text. You weren't one of the bastards that texted me to say, "What are you doing?" I have all these devices going off. I have like pings going. I have like Gmail. I have like Facebook pings. You know, people are like, "What are you doing?" This is like 7 minutes, 8 minutes.
It was rather long, but it was good. I'd like to. I'm gonna have to find that.
I'm such a
clip
jerk.
Again.
I know. I know. And I, you know what? I won't apologize. You know what?
Let it be said.
I will not apologize for Charles Olson.
Okay. I have two questions.
Uh-oh.
The first being, is Charles Olson going to be at the Toxic Abatement as a reader? And also, I'd like to talk to John Swain about his trampoline.
Yes, he will be. And I think John Swain's a little bit secretive about his trampoline. Very few of us have seen it.
I've seen it.
Oh, Johnny. John, can you just give us our listeners out there a little morsel of information about your trampoline there, sir?
Only in the winter time.
Yeah, see, there you go. All right. Winter time only. Winter time apparel. Sure to wear
that. Other people's trampolines, too, are, you know, I like to see.
There you go.
Wow.
You have a bit of a dangerous trampoline history. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, very cruel. That's, you know, many scars, injuries. My finger is broken, too. I never got fixed. It's crooked.
Yeah,
and the springs, I think the issue are those dangerous. I don't know if you had the safety, but, yeah, the springs, yeah. It's a very dangerous contraption.
But it's fun for kids. Fun for kids.
Yeah. It's good to hear you, though. You know what? We had our earlier caller do the wonderful piece Silence earlier. I don't know if you were I was moved. I was choked up. I was. So that will be a tough act to follow, but I don't know if you're interested in. I mean, you could just hang out. You don't have to read. I don't want to put you on the spot, but if you are interested, do you have something in mind?
Oh yeah, sure. I'd be happy to read something. I have
trampoline.
Trampolines.
Did you read that?
I don't have it. I don't know that one. Let's see. I'm not at home. I'm away from my. So I just like found something real quick.
Where are
I'll
you?
Read trampoline. I'll read.
No, you can do whatever you want.
Where are you?
Oh, okay. Well, I'll read trampoline another time.
If you're not home, where are you?
I'm just away.
You don't have to
answer
his. You don't have to. You don't have to reveal your location. I don't reveal my location.
This is a poem that came out in a little anthology called Lush from Rufus Press a couple months ago, and it's called In the Sand. Tables of waves in the night like commandment. I dove in all my clothes, soon lost to the ocean, and that was youth. The dunes knew many bodies, and we had our time to hide alone in vinous mouths. Always wear the white flower pressed between your shoulders in the sand to inspire like a holy book.
Okay.
Gosh, I miss you. It is so good to hear you read, and it is so good to have you call up. It's just, you know what? I can't wait to have you out there. I really can't.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And, yeah, I love that clip from Zarina and meeting and Sharon. Her poem is great, too. And, you know, I haven't met Paul yet and everything. It'll be fun. And I'm going out to Mexico, too, to see Frankie as well.
Yeah, dude.
So are you guys going to be there for that one, too?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah,
hell yes, we are. And, we're sort of getting through. You know, we're going to sort of get up to California, and then after that, we're sort of going to shift all of our collective energies to Albuquerque.
You better do it.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's a cool thing.
Yeah.
Are you flying to California, John Swain?
Yes, I am. I know some guy from Ohio was trying to get me to ride on the train, but I never heard back from him until it was too late, and
The thing about it is there's always a lot of guys from Ohio trying to get me to ride a train.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Area code 415, you're live.
Oh, yeah, no, I pick up trains. I can pick up guys on trains, too. That's important that they get picked up in neighborhoods, ideally shoddy neighborhoods, run down, crime-ridden neighborhoods. Vice crime, ideally. But I guess there's only one. I guess there's only one person coming in on a train.
I talked to Brian Fuget about his train trip, and he's telling me about how his Wi-Fi connection was going to be out because there's no Wi-Fi on the train and what have you. And I told him, I was like, you're going to be on a train for like 2 days with no Wi-Fi. I was like, you're going to be fiending like a mug when you get to San Francisco. And he's like, oh no, I have my iPhone. I was like, oh, you son of a... It's like, he's literally jacked in, like, all the time. Like, I can get up at 2 a.m., and I can get up at, like, 2 p.m., and that guy is always on live or something like that.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting.
There's going to be long stretches of the heartland and passover kind of flyover country where he ain't going to have no signal. It won't matter. He won't have a signal.
It's going to be funny to see him, like frothing at the mouth to get at, like, some Wi-Fi. I'm expecting it, totally.
You know, Paul, we played your marsupial.
Oh, Brian's rendition of it?
No, yours.
Oh, I didn't even know you had one of mine. Oh, my God.
Well, you know what? Because I have this bag of tricks, and the thing is that I attempted to load all of these items from my bag of tricks, and I was unable to access them. So it was like, you know how, like, they use the Batman signal when people need help. It was like that.
Yes.
I was like, please let Frankie Metro be around. Please let Frankie Metro come in and save me. And I swear, he like popped up online, and I was like, yes. And he totally hooked me up and helped me. Because
yeah.
It was a disaster. It was a disaster. You know, anytime I'm left to my own devices with these radio things, it's a disaster. But yeah, it was, so. But he hooked me up, and he got your track up there. It was from Age of Monsters. So
oh my God. Oh really? From that?
I know.
I didn't even know that was
a
that was you copped it off of YouTube. Oh right.
No, I didn't. I was there hiding behind a plant.
Yeah.
And I,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would never cop anything off of the internet.
We don't do that sort of thing.
I thought Evan looked a little strange that night.
Yeah.
So we have John, and John's still with us, I think. Right, John?
Yeah, I'm still here.
He's John's trying. You know, the thing I love about John is that, especially like in person, when we, you know, when we have our antics going on, John's the kind of guy who just sort of quietly backs away. You know, he's like the quiet back away guy, you know, like, you know, sort of steps backwards and tiptoes out of the room before things get really horrible.
No, you have to get in, you have to embrace it. It's important to embrace it. If you can't control it, you have to embrace it.
maybe after 4 a.m. he's a little more, yeah. Oh. See, yeah, you guys are gonna
from
meet.
Chicago, you know, I didn't run away from Chicago.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't. And I'm just, yeah, no, he's.
I know.
It'll be. We'll have fun. We're all gonna hang out. So it'll be a good time.
It's gonna be great.
You know, just to sort of bring everybody up to speed, not like anybody, you know, cares, but, you know, what my plan was is I've been playing a couple of tracks from different people from that are going to be at Toxic Abatement. So we had Sharon Coleman, we had Zarina Zabriskie, we had Paul, we have a track on here by Jezebel Delilah we can still put on, and so we had John Swain. We had a mystery caller do a wonderful piece called Silence, which was appropriately named. And we had Frankie Metro. So it's like a celebration of toxins.
Nice.
So
I don't think we're celebrating the toxins. We're celebrating the abatement of the toxins, the telling of the poem, or the reciting of the poem, the exorcism of the demons. It's the releasing of I don't know. It's the exorcising of the toxins themselves and getting them out, giving birth, getting excreting them out of our skins into the live audience venue, where it's where people can absorb it and appreciate it. I think is what we're talking about.
Right, and I'm picking up 937 too, because we're just making this a festival here.
I can't even spell abatement.
Abatement.
Starts
with an
A.
We have.
Abatement.
Well, I do a lot of math for abatement.
Yeah.
Well, who doesn't? Who doesn't?
Math.
A lot of it. Yep.
Maths.
It's the Wi-Fi Jones.
Yeah, you can find all kinds of wonderful material on the internet to help you and aid you in your master abatement.
Maths?
Yeah,
pardon me?
Yeah, MILFs.
and mastication as well.
Yeah, that's the oral version.
Mastication.
Yeah.
I love when people say, "What are you doing?" I say, "Well, I'm masticating, of course, in a restaurant."
Yeah, Mr. John Swain, are you still there, buddy?
Yes, sir.
the train ride, man. He dumped me.
I know.
What the hell
was that? Albuquerque,
it's all
man.
Set.
Well, you
no
know
one
what?
Wants to go on the train with me. It's saddening.
We can do a little
I'm
bit
sorry.
Of Dr. Phil here.
I got nervous. I had to.
Can we reconcile?
Daniel into it.
Can we get the love back, like between everybody though? Can we like
we had John. John Swain. We had a mystery caller do a wonderful piece called Silence.
Yeah, that was pretty special. I really enjoyed that.
Who the hell was that? Do you know that, you know, that just reminds me of the fact that Frank Reardon claims that I remind him of Elaine from Seinfeld. When I'm on the radio, and yeah,
my
now I understand why. Yeah, now I understand why, because that was a terrible clip you just played.
I'll try to get Michelle McDaniel to go on the train. She didn't want nothing to do with it due to the fact I don't think she can smoke for like 3 days.
That's true.
Yeah. Only you could put it down that toilet, it fires everything out onto the tracks.
No Marlboros,
ain't no Wi-Fi.
No smoking zone.
Yeah.
Well, they do stop. I mean, I would think that they would have smoking cars. They don't do that anymore. I mean, I'm out of touch.
It was like
1940,
man. It's like Cary Grant was in a smoking car, man.
No, I thought the last time I was on a train, I think we had cigars on the train, if I recall.
But
I don't know.
You weren't smoking them.
Yeah, we were, but there was a special designated, you know, place you had to go. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they don't do that. You know how it is, especially, you know, once you cross the border into California. I mean, you know,
Well, I think, are cigarettes even legal in California anymore?
No. No, you can't smoke in your own house out there. Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
You'll buy them down off the guy on the corner for $15 a pack if you catch him at the right time. That's
wow.
Where you go. Meanwhile, there's stores where you can go to buy weed. So it's completely reversed. Marijuana is
illegal,
and everybody can sport, and everybody's smoking it, and you really have to go sort of underground to get your cigarettes.
Wow.
Yeah, that's strange. Because they're not medicinal.
You could argue they are, but you just have to learn to kind of do things in reverse out in California. California, I don't even mean all of California. The Central Valley is still very conservative and very much like the rest of America. But out here on the coast, it's kind of like we just pretend that Gore won back in 2000. And we just live in this perpetual little bubble where we pretend that Gore won and that he's president for life. And we just live the yuppie dream, you know, where...
I think
where
you're pretending Nader won.
Everybody slaves away for the, you know, the greater glory of our liberal intellect.
Paul Corman Roberts, who did you vote for in 2000?
I don't even know. Did I vote for Nader? I voted for Nader in 2000 because I already knew Gore was going to win California. So I just said, you know, maybe I can help Nader get 5%. Maybe I can help Nader get 5%. And I did it, and I don't apologize for it. And it's possible that Ralph Nader ruined this country forever. It's possible that he did. I get how, you know, you can put that cause and effect together, but at the same time, how can you deny somebody their right to run for office? How can you deny the right to a person? I mean, if we're truly a democracy, we have to allow anybody who can to run for office. You have to sacrifice for the greater good is a cop out in a democracy, in my opinion.
So you're saying that 5% so that he could receive the matching federal funds so that he can compete against the two-party system in the future.
There was definitely talk of like reaching for that goal to get him that 5%, and of course he fell, you know, horribly short of that. You know, we really miscalculated how conservative America really was, I suppose.
No, I think a lot of people were afraid of the outcome that we ended up getting from it. I think a lot of people were very and rightfully concerned about that. But, you know, I think that the thing is with third party, and I don't want to go on a tear, you know, we are an archive. But I think, you know, I think that there's never a good time.
Hey.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I didn't know
what
it was for.
Yeah.
And I was just telling
you.
Yeah,
I'm a little bit confused.
Check. Tell her to bring the check. We've been waiting for a long time.
I guess for about a week. Well, I'll probably text you guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I left the tip on the card, man. I don't have cash for the table. Yeah.
It sounds like you're in a restaurant.
Helicopters. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm terrible. I should not even be on the air here. I apologize.
What on earth are you talking about?
There's a drug bust going on down the street.
Are you outside?
I am outside. I'm outside. Yeah, no, I'm at the Naked Bowl.
Oh,
hey,
oh,
I'm
so you're at Missy's.
I'm at the Greyhound bus station in Oakland.
Well, that's where we're going next.
Isn't Naked Bowl typically on a Saturday?
Yeah, but the Razor Babes are in town tonight, so there was a special one tonight.
Oh, okay.
There it is, the sound of a drug bust in Oakland.
I think that we're listening to Paul Corman Roberts get arrested on Project U Radio. I think that we're witnessing a bust in progress.
We are. Well, no, it's actually down the block from me, but yeah, no, there's some activity going on here, so I should probably let you folks go. But thanks
right.
for involving
well,
me tonight.
And we should go anyway because we did our 9 minutes of Charles Olson, and no, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I totally started the show with 9 minutes of Charles Olson, and I like I said, I will not apologize because I think it was just a wonderful clip. So yeah,
it sounds like it was a great show. I'm sorry I wasn't able to be here for part of it, for most of it, but I thank you for that, and I'm definitely going to be pimping it on the networks tomorrow. So thank you everyone so very much.
Oh, thank you. And you know what? I don't know, Frankie, are you still on? Because do you think that we could play that? That clip by Jezebel Delilah before we sign off.
Jezebel.
That's kind of it's kind of a long clip too. I don't know if it tells you on there how long, but we could sort of end with that unless one of our callers is interested in reading something.
I don't hear any takers.
Oh,
I don't think so.
Yeah? Hello. Brian?
Yeah. Yeah, that's me.
Go for it, Brian.
Who's this?
Who are you?
I don't know. Man, there's so many people on. I don't know who's who. Everyone sounds the same to me. All right. Well, I have a poem here. It is titled Coffee at the Two Cup Cafe. My waitress, Irene, as a full-dyke brunette with a mouthful of canceled teeth and a smile naked as a Sunday sunbeam. She leans over the table to refill the coffee, and I catch an eyeful of breath so close I can feel the heat gathering in her cleavage. My libido makes a hasty alcohol-addled assessment. Note, Irene's breath, pendulous yet firm. Not bad for a woman pushing 50. Just then, the drunken sailor at the next table pinches her ass. She yelps, misfires, and I find myself with a lap full of scalding hot Colombian breakfast blend. She attempts to apologize as I frantically fan my crotch, but her voice gets lost somewhere else as her face is swallowed by the phlegm-basted cackle of a smoker's laugh. And
that was up at Laura Hurd's site. That we went to. Yeah. Yeah, wasn't that? That was up over there, right?
Oh, yeah. That is, I
pretty
guess.
Sure it was. Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah, the link that I said I couldn't find.
Oh, yeah, that's right. No.
Right. One of my shining moments of intellect, yeah. No, that's I actually like that one a lot. I do. At what age are you pushing 50?
At
like 48?
I'd say, yeah. Late 40?
Yeah. All right, cool. That's cool. I'm just curious. I'm just wondering at what point I'm pushing 50. Now, who is actually, you know what? I have to tell you, I've lost my way. I don't know who's still on anymore.
We got Paul and you, and we got Brian and Juan.
All right, because I think Paul is gone.
Oh, okay. Well, 502. I'm sorry. That's John Swain, actually.
Yeah.
Word.
Okay, see, I couldn't tell. I can't, I don't know. I don't know who is who anymore. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be a jerk.
Well, you're good at it, though. That's all right.
I am good. You know what? Of all things to excel at, I happen to excel at being an asshole. I know. I know.
Nah. Far from it. Whatever.
I'm a jerk. Yeah. All right. Well, you know what? I guess we are in archives, and it is getting late. And so what I think we should do is maybe play Jezebel Delilah, because I want you guys to sort of hear her, because you will be meeting her at Toxic Abatement, and you'll be seeing her around. She'll be at Beast Crawl, and I mean, she's something. If you don't know her, you know, certainly look her up on Facebook, and probably what I should do is put some links up. I always say I'll do that, and then I forget. But yeah, Jezebel Delilah, she's, you know, you could look on my friends list too. But maybe before we end this particular episode, we can put her on. And yeah, what do you think, Metro?
Let's do it. Jezebel,
all right.
Delilah.
All right. And thank you, John, and thank you, Brian. And I, you know, I hope there's that love between you guys, because,
well, I was,
you know,
hoping to hear a Merman Gondolier poem by Mr. John Swain.
He only does that live.
Earlier I heard you kind of knocking on our man John Swain, saying that he's just in the background, kind of like trying to get away from us. That's not the memory I have. I have a really fond memory of hanging out and partying pretty hard until like 9 a.m. with Mr. John.
Well, that's what I mean. It's like he became I was thinking more of like when we were doing the video and the radio while, and the whole Papa Smurf episode, and I just sort of remember John holding, you know, kind of, you know, stepping away in an observer way, kind of like the Nick Carraway.
Well, listen, when you see a tall black man talking like Bill Cosby raping a Smurf doll, I probably, you know, and I didn't know the guy very well, I'd probably sit back too and be like, what in the hell have I gotten into? But
well, I thought I was just trying to make everybody feel comfortable, man. I was just trying to make everybody feel at home, you know.
Yeah, it worked.
I have to say, well, what does that say about our home lives?
You guys don't even want to know, like, for real. Like, you spend about a week. Well, you guys will know when you come to Albuquerque. You spend about a few days in the Metro household, and, you know, up becomes down, left becomes right.
Papa Smurf becomes hot.
Yeah. Stuff happens, man. Happens.
No, but you know what? And I shouldn't have said it like that. I should have clarified that I was more referring to that particular episode, because definitely, you know, John is, he definitely doesn't shy away from the party. I was thinking more of that particular event. And
he's a very snazzy dresser, too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, he's beautiful. I mean, I don't care. I'll go on record. I will go on the radio. I will say, you know me. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, he can do no wrong. You know, he's John Swain.
John Swain.
Everybody. Yeah. So, you know, I think everybody knows, you know, that.
Are you ready to end this thing, Lynn? You ready to end this? Let's do this. Let's play this. I'm wanting to hear this Jezebel track.
Let's go. Okay, good night. And put it on.
Word up. Jezebel Delilah. Boom.
I'm Jezebel Delilah X. Yeah. I think I'm in love with Patty. That was awesome.
Her first time.
Can we clap for her again? Yeah. Then I don't get angry that often because I believe in the collective orgy. Great solution. This is called bitch pathology. My body is curved and straining. A twisted, broken fetus whimpering underneath the velvet sangria
vibrator my mother bought me. And she is non-consensually ripping, shoving, pulling, kicking it off of me. I clutch the mattress tight, clinging to the imagined shelter I wish the comforter could provide, gasping and weaving beneath the weight of her frenzy, the vicious legacy of this situation. Search my mind for some familiarity, some sociocultural documentation I might have found in my race, gender, liberal education, and there is nothing. No straight white man for me to blame. No systematic oppression to be deconstructed. No book to open. No Google search. No rally to attend. No open arm support group or performance of resistance. Mounted, back erect like a statued monument to an imperializing colonialist, her knee grinds the callous labor into the flab small of my back. Her perfectly manicured fingernails dig and puncture sweaty layers of skin and grime from the side folds of my breast. I side crouch further, retreating embryonically from her scavenging hands, my thighs protruding in angles perpendicular, creasing beneath the billows of my gallowed belly. Her thighs cage the soft, wide expanse of my hips, and I can't help but remember that my prison is actually another brown woman who claims to love me. My affection freezes me, whispers memories of her own marginalization, beckons compassion, and as a good Christian woman should, I turn my cheek the other way as she bites and scratches me. My face burns swollen beneath the sting of her hand, but I distract myself with the argument that she's just as much a victim as me, strategize that this is just another testament to the socialization of misogyny. I blindly, desperately grasp at the fallacious logic that at 5'3", 115, delicate, soft, black, and pretty, there's no way she could be the perpetrator of patriarchy. Later, I'll be crying. Later, I'll be shaking, vomiting, pleading. Please stop dismantling my radical woman as goddess love philosophy. Please stop using your words, body, action to hurt me. Please stop abusing, bruising, torturing me. And she will say, how can I attack you if you are 150 pounds more than me, 1 inch taller than me, so many pant sizes larger than me, I feel fucking guilty. Confused and shut out and dismantled by the dimpled vastness of my own physical topography. For now, I shake hard. Hiccups interrupt my crying, my silence triggering her screaming, my face crushed into the mattress beneath me, molecules of fat packaged in earth-brown skin, the same African diasporic as her own ancestral lineage, carry the print of her handprint and her belt with and her shoe and her fist and my razor, and even with my eyes closed and my palms pressed firm against my ears, I still hear her sweet, sugary, cavity-filled voice. Baby, Jesse, baby, honey, sweetie, can you hear me? Why aren't you talking, darling? Why are you ignoring me, lover? Don't you love me? Stop fucking ignoring me, baby. Talk to me, Jezebel. I just want to love you. Why are you so suddenly quiet, honey? So snooty. Don't you want my attention, little Miss Diva? Little Miss Highfelt Princess, Miss Exhibitionist, Miss Flirt with everyone in front of your own woman, don't you want to know the truth, Jezebel? I'll tell you the truth. You have low self-esteem. You're insecure, and you need validation from everyone you meet. Why won't you speak, baby? Why don't you love me, baby? It's because I'm right, isn't it? Go ahead and say it. I want to hear your voice. Stop being so stubborn and admit it, bitch. Hello? 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 Can you hear me? I'm talking to you. I'm asking you a question. Talk! 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 Slender fingers, steady pull at cover, sheet, pajamas, skin, unlayering me, unraveling me, PhD in psychology, she uses her own political legacy of resistance to colonize me, and I call out internalized racism, internalized sexism, internalized homophobia, use every excuse to forgive her, dedicate my time to protecting her. brown fingers that started off loving me, started off exploring me, urging me into these frenzied gasps of heaven tears. Now gay Kenny, rape into my skin, more tattoos of palm-shaped resentment onto my skin, shoved into the bra and panties I bought to stimulate her urge for sexual aesthetics, and type narratives of hate in a code I can't decipher onto my clitoris. She scowls, giggles, shanks my fear, pebbled nipples. Don't you like it, baby? You like it rough, don't you? Why don't you call me Daddy now, Princess? You know you're a bitch, right? Yeah, you're a bitch. Yeah, you are. A childish, silly, insecure, depressed little bitch. What? You don't like it? You don't like when I call you a bitch? Oh, well, bitch. Too bad, bitch. There's a lot of things I don't like, bitch. Don't like it when you don't make love to me when I ask, bitch. Don't fucking like it when you're always doing your schoolwork, bitch. I don't like it when you talk, bitch. You don't like the way this feels. It's your fault, bitch. You're the abusive one, bitch. You're a neglectful bitch, bitch. And then, when my skin is ripped and my lingerie is shed and I'm barebacked and naked, fine white scratches contrasting with my skin, she cries starvation tears, throws her arms around my legs as I ransack my drawers for a blouse and a pair of escape slacks, ground level humbled, her eyes green and glistening and luminous, staring up at me. Suicide threats punctuate her every, I love you, baby, please don't leave me, I'm working on it, I'll die if you go away, queen. And it's so easy to say that the last thing my community needs is another decaying dyke body. And though I haven't conversed with him in years, Jesus did say that it's my gender's job to forgive and forgive. And she's quick to remind me that with my size and eclectic personality, there's no one else that would ever love me quite like her. And since I have yet to contextualize her definition of love with possessive subjugation and intentionalized hurt, I allow myself to believe it. And temporarily, only temporarily, I forfeit my right to my own freedom, queen autonomy, temporarily forfeit the righteous legacies of black earth queens that raise the daggered fist to the mucus philosophies of all men are created equal hypocrisy, and only temporarily, because my big, black, fat, gorgeous ancestor spirits won't give me more fallacy room than that, I allow myself to be colonized and self-vilified by her own bitch-hate pathology. Thank you.